So our vehicles, necessary and beloved though they may be, make some strange noises from time to time. Our next guest has heard many of these over the years. Zach Edwards is the owner of Ashland Automotive, and he's our partner in a monthly segment we call The Squeaky Wheel. In this context, you are the squeaky wheel. Give us a call or email to talk about automotive issues you've had or are currently having. 838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. This month, let's focus on the process of acquiring a vehicle someone else has owned and what warning signs to watch for. And Zach Edwards, why don't we welcome, first of all, welcome back to the studio. Good to see you here.
Hey, it's good to see you too.
So it's often urged, I know, by mechanics, like just bring the car you're thinking about buying over to me and I'll give it a once over. What's the stuff you tend to look for first in those circumstances?
That's a great question. What we first, you know, the visual inspection, just looking around at the outside of the car and looking for any signs of body damage that's been repaired or body damage that hasn't been repaired, just trying to notate everything we can. Believe it or not, we see a lot of things that other people just don't see, and it's because we're just always looking at cars. It's kind of in our blood. It's what we do, and we notice... you know, for instance, if a body panel's been repaired or replaced and the reveal, the seam of where that body panel matches up with the next one, if it's not quite right, it's very obvious to the trained eye, but, you know, regular drivers might not notice something like that.
And something that should be a 16th of an inch and you notice if it's an eighth or something, that kind of thing?
Yeah, or if, you know, the next seam down is an eighth of an inch and all the seams are an eighth of an inch and then this one is more or less than that, it's pretty obvious to us. And so, and the Carfax reports don't always show body damage or body repair or stuff like that. So we look for that first. And then, of course, just driving the car is a really good indicator of the condition of the car. And then once we get it up on the rack, we can, what we like to call shake it down, just kind of feel how tight the suspension is and look for leaks, anything leaking, and notate that. And then inside the car, we, you know, check out the air conditioning and the heating and all the controls, and look for any dash lights that are on, and make sure also that all the dash lights, there's a prove out mode. When you first turn the key on, all the lights should come on in the dash. And what that allows you to do is see that the light actually works, so that if it needs to come on, it will come on. And sometimes we've found actually where the check engine light doesn't prove out. So meaning it was on for so long that the bulb burned out, or someone has removed the bulb. And I mean, you know, that doesn't happen very often, but we have seen some strange things like that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Airbag lights,
looking for the,
too.
You're looking for the panels to light up, and it's like, wait a minute, there's a light missing here.
Yeah.
It should be on.
Yeah.
Interesting. Zach Edwards, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the squeaky wheel. What are the things that you have seen in looking for a used vehicle? Things that you thought, you know, that might be something, and it turned out not to be, and you bought the car, or things that actually concerned you at the time and did turn out to be issues. Join us on the Exchange with your story, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. When driving a car, for example, I mean, how to know if you're not familiar with a model, for example, how would you come up with some determination of like, well, it feels a little bouncy, like, but is that this car or is that something that happens with this model, that sort of thing?
That really comes with the experience of the technician doing the drive. Shocks and struts and extra bounces like you're talking about they can be difficult to discern, you know, what's normal and what's not. So the experience of the technician really comes into play. And for struts and suspension components, a lot of times the only way you can really get a feel for the type of condition they're in is just drive the car. You can bounce a car up and down sitting flat, but you really only get one bounce before you've kind of charged those strut cartridges, and then you can't do that again for quite a while until the gas charge in there settles down. So driving it is just really the best way. And struts are one of those things that are very commonly overlooked. Generally, they last about 50,000 miles, but if you are on a really bumpy road on a daily basis, that you're not going to get 50,000 miles out of your struts. And they're also one of those things that you don't realize how bad they are until you get them replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And then you feel how good the car feels again, because they just very slowly wear out through normal usage over time. So that's one of those things when you're driving, it's really tough to find it any other way than when you're driving.
So if you're looking at a car, and this actually happened to us a while ago, we test drove a car. It's like, well, this thing looks like it's okay, but they look few things like, you know, a few screws were missing on some of the trim around the radiator, stuff that would never be visible unless you actually got down on the ground and looked at it. And I wasn't sure at the time, we didn't buy the car, but I wasn't sure at the time how much of a difference does that make. If it's simply that's something that's cosmetic, but there's a screw missing, is that something that, does it tell a larger story about the car in your mind?
It does. There's a lot of folks that have a relative that they call a mechanic that they'll come in and say, yeah, my uncle's a mechanic or my brother's a mechanic or my cousin's a mechanic and he does a lot of work on my car. And those types of mechanics oftentimes have parts left over after they do a repair. So they'll replace a radiator and then they'll have a couple extra bolts left over and they'll think, yeah, these are probably not necessary. Well, when we see missing bolts or missing screws, and yet the car still drives, so you know some people might think it's okay. But it's what the picture, what it's telling us is that this car has been worked on or maintained by someone who's not a professional, and that not always, but it's common for that to lead to bigger problems. And you know this is a big puzzle. Cars are just a big puzzle, and we do our best to try and get an idea of what's happening. But again, it's like in the medical world, you in a lot of ways you're just guessing, especially when you're inspecting a used car. You could do everything right, tell the customer to buy the car, everything looks good, and still 1,000 miles down the road the engine could blow up and you have no reason, no explanation for it. So
and no way of knowing it was going to happen either. So
yeah, and actually that just happened to a friend of mine, and I bet he's probably listening right now and maybe he'll call in, but he did everything right. He actually got two used pre-purchase inspections, mm-hmm. At two different places because that's how diligent he is. And poor guys, that you know, the engine just seized up on the freeway within 5,000 miles of them buying it. And there's just nothing, you know, we don't have a crystal ball, even though we want one.
Right, right. Well, you mentioned putting the car up on the rack and shaking it down. I mean, do you plug it in, get the diagnostic codes, that sort of thing out of the car too?
Yeah, we would do that if the check engine light was on. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is determined by the mileage of the car. So we first, you know, we visually look at the car and then we drive the car. And that kind of points us in a direction or two. And yeah, we will scan for codes, even though the check engine light isn't on, to make sure there's no what's called pending codes. But we wouldn't dig into any of those codes. We just make a note of what they are and then make the recommendation to look further into them. But you know, you're trying to get this inspection done in an hour or an hour and a half, and there's a lot of things to cover. So we try and make it comprehensive, but not too involved in one particular area.
Sure, I understand. Yeah, you're trying to get a once over on the car in a short amount of time. Is there has the mileage crept up over the years? I mean, when people talk about buying used vehicles now, do you feel safer recommending a higher mileage than perhaps you did earlier in your career?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, cars are just lasting longer and longer. The average age of a car now in America, I want to say, is 12 years now, which it used to be much less than that. So cars are lasting longer than ever before, and where a lot of the advancements have come have been with domestic cars. You know, it used to be Fords and Chevys at 100,000 miles, they were done, and you were lucky to get 100,000 miles. And now we're seeing Chevys, Fords, I don't know if we're seeing Chryslers yet lasting too long, but
they've kind of had to.
Jeeps last.
These put these 100,000 mile warranties on them, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know if they've did that with domestic cars, but you know, Jeep owners are a unique owner, and they tend to they really love their cars. You know, you buy a Jeep because usually you buy a Jeep because you love Jeeps, and so they take pretty good care of their cars. And so because of that, we see Jeeps come in with mileage that we never used to see before. You see a Jeep with 200,000 miles. But yeah, you can recommend a customer buy a car and not be afraid to buy a car now with higher mileage, you know, maybe 150, 175,000 miles even if it's a Toyota. And that owner has been able to produce the maintenance records. That's the other key thing is, as a buyer of a used car, you want to be asking questions like, you know, did you maintain your car? And if so, who did the maintenance? And if so, do you have the records and can I look through it? Because a good car owner is going to have all those records, and that's really valuable to a potential buyer.
So not just, did you take care of it? Yeah, I did.
Exactly.
But, you know, I actually asked for to see the physical records,
yeah,
and the dates and places and all that stuff.
Yeah. I was looking at a used car the other day, and I asked the guy, you know, who does your maintenance? And he says, oh, I always take it to the dealer. And just I do whatever, you know, whatever they say. And I said, oh, great. So I asked him that before I even went out to look at the car, because it can be such a waste of time going to look at cars. And so I got out there and I asked him for the records, and I was thumbing through, and this guy had declined every recommendation ever made. I mean, yes, he took it to the dealer, but he only did the oil change, and everything else that they recommended was a no, no, no. And he had no other real records of that maintenance either. And so I passed on this particular one because you could just tell that, you know, he or she, whoever owned that car, just wasn't into doing the maintenance.
Zach Edwards is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. It's our monthly visit, the squeaky wheel. This time we're talking about what to do when the squeaks are coming from a used car. If you're thinking about buying a used vehicle, what are some of the warning signs? And you can share some stories with us about this and things that you've been thinking about in terms of buying a car and went, you know, I'm not so sure about that. Well, here's the place to ask. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, or you can send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. The whole thing with the odometers, I used to like the physical odometers where you could actually see them when the car was turned off. You can't do that anymore. You peer in the window of a car, you have no idea what the mileage is other than what it says on the sticker, which, you know, you hope is correct. But I mean, so what are some of the other signs that people look for just sort of in looking over at a car overall? It's going to get some wear and tear over time.
Yeah.
It's going to get some, you know, dings and bug splats on the front of the car, maybe some paint chipped on the very front, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Beyond that, what are the things that you think should be considered as, this might be a warning sign?
You know, another thing is the title condition. There's a lot of salvage titles out there. And, you know, if you were looking for cars on Craigslist, one of the options on the right side of that listing is going to say title status. And then, you know, it'll say clean if there's no brandish on the title, or it will say, you know, salvage or rebuilt. And what that means is that at some point in time, the car was in an accident that was substantial enough to where the repairs were greater than the value of the car, and the insurance company has paid out. So they paid out on the value of that car. And now the title status has been changed from clean to, you know, rebuilt. And so when a car's been in an accident such as that, like that bad of an accident, oftentimes there's things that are never quite the same again. It's really hard to, especially if like the frame of a car has been bent. We've had some cars before that we just couldn't align. We couldn't get the wheels in alignment. Because
the frame was just tweaked enough.
Yeah, the frame was tweaked. And so those cars are really meant to be, some of those cars, I should say, are not meant to be driven again. And but with enough work, you can try and put them back together again, and then sometimes they end up out there for sale. And the buyer just needs to be really careful with any car like that.
If the car is being sold by, you know, a body shop or something, is it likely that car was in some sort of collision damage?
Yeah. It's not uncommon for body shops to do that on the side, you know, and usually the accidents, I think, are minor, that they're putting a car, you know, back in good shape again and trying to get it back out on the road. But for the average, you know, consumer and the average used car buyer, it can be really hard for them to tell, you know, is this going to be a good fit for me or not? For more savvy used car buyers, you know, and I would consider myself one of them, I would still be pretty reluctant to buy a car that had been in a pretty bad wreck, because it can be good one day and you know, all of a sudden a rattle shows up that you just can't track it down. You just cannot figure out where this rattle is coming from. Or a water leak that, you know, the car seems fine in the summertime, but then once the rain comes, you've got water collecting in a certain part of the car. Or we've had that happen before where a customer had a water leak, and eventually we tracked it down to where a seam, a body panel seam, wasn't caulked when it was put back together. And so she was having water pool up in her spare tire well in the trunk, and that was causing a bunch of steam and fog in the car. And so we found the water pooling up and eventually tracked down the seam that just didn't have any caulking in it.
Wow, that's just quite a mystery. It took you a while to solve that one.
It took so long, and it was just a really unpleasant experience for the customer because she wasn't unhappy with us, but she was just really frustrated that her car was taking on water, and it was taking us quite a while to figure out how and why.
A couple of questions from listeners here on the Squeaky Wheel with Zach Edwards. Here is David in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. Hello, Zach.
Hi, David.
My question is about hybrids. I've got a 2009 Camry hybrid. I positively love the car. It's mostly highway miles. Are you seeing any particular pattern of repair needs with hybrid vehicles now that they've been on the road for as many years as they have?
Yeah, no, actually we're not. Those cars are just great cars, and I think the battery life in those cars is exceeding Toyota's expectations, actually. So we do replace some hybrid batteries. Generally, they're high mileage hybrids, but for the most part, those cars are just fantastic cars and regular maintenance items with them, just like any other car. Fluids, filters, fixing the leaks as they happen.
Is there much maintenance with the Synergy Drive itself in those cars?
No, not too much. You know, they have they've got coolant that keeps that cool. Now, with that being said, there is a new technology that is coming out where it allows the shop to perform like battery maintenance, and that is a deep discharge and recharge of the hybrid battery. Mm-hmm. And you do that a couple times, like back to back. And so what you're basically doing is resetting the hybrid battery. And that's because the battery there's an optimal way for that battery to live out its life. And that would be this perfect combination of highway and in-town driving. And for a lot of drivers, they don't drive in that optimal way. They might drive far more in town or far more on the freeway. And what this service allows the shops to do is put that hybrid battery back to a perfect state of charge, in a simplified term. And doing that, say every couple of years would be kind of like a 30,000 or 60,000 mile service for your hybrid battery. And so that's pretty brand new technology. We should have it in our shop by the spring. But that would be one thing that, would be good to do. And it's kind of state-of-the-art technology, actually. So I don't know of anybody doing it right now.
All right. David, thanks for that question. Appreciate it. Here's Taryn in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, they recommend that I change that cabin filter every now and then. And I just wondered, is that really necessary?
That's a good question. Yeah, and I just wrote a blog about this, actually, in relation to the smoke that we're experiencing. I'm sure you're having it down there. Absolutely, it's necessary. That filter is the filter. It's equivalent to the filter that you have in your house, which filters the air before it goes through the furnace blower motor. And that filter, especially with the particulates in the air right now from the smoke and the ash, does a great job of cleaning the air before it redistributes the air inside your car. And how they're measured in terms of effectiveness is in parts per million. And parts per million, as you can imagine, is pretty small. So they can be 25% plugged and still actually look and seem like they're fine, because it's parts per million. You can't really see those tiny little microns that are plugging up the tiny perforations in that pleated filter. So, you should feel lucky that you have that filter, and you should change it when they tell you to, because you might not notice the difference, but you're doing good stuff for your car.
All right, another question here from Jacob in Springfield. Welcome to the Squeaky Wheel with Zach Edwards here on the Exchange.
Hi, Zach. I wanted to ask you, what do you think, why are Japanese cars, particularly Toyotas, much more reliable than, let's say, Jaguars or Chryslers? You know, what's the secret sauce that they have put into their cars? You know,
it's another fluid, a secret sauce.
What have we learned?
Yeah, what have we learned? Good question. Thanks for that, Jacob.
Yeah, I can tell you, I wish I had read the book, but I haven't. But there's a book, I think it's called The Toyota Method or The Toyota Way. But it's their manufacturing and their attention to detail and their engineering that really showed in the longevity of the cars. That's where, you know, like the proof is in the pudding. They were doing things differently. And actually, American car manufacturers took notice and actually went over and observed the way they're making cars in Japan, and brought those practices back home and implemented them in their factories. But so it has to do with the quality of the steel and the aluminum, for one, the materials, and then the engineering and the assembly. So you know, when you're assembling an engine, there has to be practices in place where if there's a mistake, you can stop and make it right away.
Okay, so differences in the manufacturing approach overall. Okay, well, wow, yeah. We learned a lot. We always learn a lot when you're here.
Yeah, cool.
Zach Edwards is the proprietor of Ashland Automotive and our monthly guest for a segment we call The Squeaky Wheel. And we've been talking generally about the things to look for, danger signs when you're thinking about buying a used vehicle. Thanks again so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. Right.
That'll do it for this edition of this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Back to talk about the NFL on this NFL opening weekend in hour two coming up.